Ladies and gentlemen, people of the internet, welcome back to yet another episode of Crypto Over Coffee. Hope you're doing well today. In today's episode, we're talking about the Bitcoin and crypto markets and whether or not it's time to worry in the face of Federal Reserve actions and other macroeconomic conditions and how they affect the market, our usual 404 Logic Not Found segment and more. So make sure you stick around for the whole show to get all the updates we have in store. We got a good one today. If you like crypto, please subscribe to the channel, hit the bell notification button, or follow the podcast on your platform of choice so you can get a heads up whenever I post new episodes of Crypto Over Coffee every single Saturday. And better yet, if you are a subscriber and you leave a comment on the YouTube video, you'll automatically be entered to win a random draw for a Keystone Pro hardware wallet every single week. Now, finally, I just want to give you a reminder that there are scammers all over social media, including YouTube, Twitter, Telegram, WhatsApp, all sorts of stuff, pretending to be me asking you for money or personal info. So I won't reach out to you. I won't ask you for money. If you get a comment on YouTube that asks you to contact me, please report it. And of course, please be safe out there. Now, last week's episode of Crypto Over Coffee, we talked about sort of quelling the calls for a bull market resurgence. And we were seeing Bitcoin reaching the high 40,000s. And that was pushing a lot of people to say, hey, a bull market's back online. And this week, the reasons why it's important not to get carried away with bullishness became pretty clear. This week, Bitcoin saw a pullback to the low 40Ks, which at the time of recording equates to around $42,500 per Bitcoin. And much of the market is red along with Bitcoin, as usually happens, where Bitcoin goes, the rest of the market follows. And even altcoins that have bucked the trend in the past, like Luna, have also dropped. Now, many hopefuls would call this a healthy pullback before a rocket back up to 50K, but I frankly think that scenario is unlikely. If we look at what predicated this particular drop in price that we're seeing, you'll see that there are a handful of concerning data points that point to a potential further downside rather than a resurgence. First of all, the biggest of the beasts facing the Bitcoin and crypto markets is the Federal Reserve's latest discussions around monetary policy, specifically rate hikes and trimming of assets on their balance sheet to counteract rampant inflation. As we've discussed on the show many times, rate hikes, so raising interest rates and tightening monetary policy from the Federal Reserve, pushes investors out of risk assets like crypto and equities. After the first rate hike earlier this year, the crypto markets had already panicked and sort of priced in that event in the months prior to March. But renewed fears came this week as reports broke that the Federal Reserve would be taking a more aggressive approach to counteracting inflation than people might have believed. This quote-unquote hawkish messaging, as it's colloquially called, signaled a potentially more aggressive effort to trim the securities on the central bank's $9 trillion balance sheet that were purchased to support the economy over the last 2 years. And it could also signal potentially more aggressive rate hike schedule, including a more significant rate hike by point value in the not-so-distant future. These fears were evident in the markets recently, with significant Bitcoin moving onto exchanges. That data really points to people selling Bitcoin late this week as that news permeated through the community. I mean, on April 8th alone, I was using Santiment and a few other places. I saw data that pointed to $1.3 billion worth of Bitcoin inflowing to exchanges and only 1 million in outflows on that same day. So that says to me that people are selling or at least preparing to sell with Bitcoin on exchange. So we're not in the point of panic selling, at least not yet, but I fear we're in for a sort of replay of earlier this year when the initial fears of rate hikes began to bubble up and then drove Bitcoin and crypto down with waves of selling pressure. And if you mix this hawkish Federal Reserve messaging with already uneasy markets due to regulatory movement around the world, including the EU's controversial self-hosted wallet regulations, you kind of have a recipe for negative price action. This prediction, of course, is a short-term proposition. Things can change on a dime. But right now, I'm concerned about the way things are trending from a macroeconomic perspective with regard to the crypto markets. We're still above 40K with support within this sort of low 40K range. But what if that breaks with the fear gripping the risk asset markets and fears of rate hikes and we see the 30Ks again? The retail fear of missing out or FOMO buyers will exit if they haven't already. And things aren't yet in full alarm market sell-off mode, but I am worried that we could get there given the situation that I mentioned above. So I guess I'll pose it to you. Could this play out like the first quarter of 2022 did? It's impossible to say for sure, but regardless, you should consider this scenario in your planning for the markets in quarter two as we get kicked off here. Right now, I'm personally taking profits off the table, and some of the altcoins that I bought during the earlier part of the year when prices were low, and I'm taking off about 10% of those holdings. And this kind of maintains exposure to these altcoins should the tides turn, but I am de-risking a little bit. So what I do is not necessarily what you should do, but you should consider both outcomes for the market, both positive and negative, before you make your decisions to how to play it. So what do you think? Do you think this is just a flash in the pan dip? Do you think that rate hikes, balance sheet trimming, and the hawkish messaging from the Federal Reserve and fighting inflation will prove to be detrimental in the short term? Let me know in the comments. I want to hear your thoughts. Now, on the channel, I've talked a ton about alternative investments, investments in assets that aren't crypto, that aren't equities, how to diversify and get exposure to those assets that are less correlated with the stock market and crypto wherever possible. And let's be real, everything's affected by the stock market in some ways, but still, you're looking for things that are somewhat uncorrelated. When I roll profits out of crypto, usually I'm rolling them into other assets. I don't want to just throw all my money in a bank, right? We know why. And I try and throw them in assets that are as the least correlated to the stock market or traditional markets as I can. And I use the S&P 500 as sort of a control to measure against. And fine art is one that ticks that box. So I want to talk a little bit more about one of the services that I've been using to build up asset investments in the fine art space. And that is a platform called Masterworks. And this is not sponsored by Masterworks, by the way. Masterworks is a pretty brilliant platform that gives everyday investors access to fine art pieces in the form of shares. So basically, they break larger, expensive pieces of art into shares that can be purchased by investors to gain exposure to that art. By sort of doing this in this way, Masterworks' core product and that thing they're offering is accessibility. The platform provides investors like you and me who would otherwise not have access to art by Banksy, Monet, Basquiat, Kusama, etc., the opportunity to invest in fine art without having to know a guy or go to fancy auctions or do all this due diligence on our own or buy a whole piece outright in cash. Masterworks also takes care of finding, purchasing, storing that art, as well as obtaining insurance and managing the regulatory filings for the securitization of that art, which drives their fee structure of 1.5% annual, and that's their fee. The way things generally work is that you invest in shares of a given art piece that Masterworks has purchased. Masterworks holds that piece for 3 to 10 years on average before selling it, hopefully for a profit. And they take 20% of those proceeds from sale, and the rest is then distributed out pro rata to shareholders based on your proportion of shares. There's also a secondary market for these art shares on the platform where you can sell your shares before the sale of that art piece to recover funds earlier. But to sell those shares, you need a buyer. So there's no guarantee of liquidity. So just bear that in mind. You can't guarantee the secondary market sale is going to work for you. So that kind of covers how you get paid and how Masterworks get paid, just so we're clear. And by the way, if you want to skip the wait list and you want to join Masterworks and start checking it out, please use my link in the description below. I get nothing in return for using the link, but it does let you skip that waitlist process. Now, I also want to make clear that due to the time scale Masterworks owns these art pieces, you can be in a position holding these shares for years, not weeks or months. So make sure you know the risks that are in place. Art is not a guaranteed win. There's no such thing as a guaranteed investment win. So please read the disclosures for Masterworks. I'll leave those in the description as well. And understand that there is risk in this and any investment that you make. So I've personally had a really good experience with the platform so far. And I'll be diversifying more into art over time as a small percentage of my overall investment portfolio, along with other assets like wine, whiskey, and real estate, sort of add to my diversified portfolio. Now, if we enter the wormhole back to the crypto space again, I want to share some news about one of the projects that I've been really interested in for the last year or so as a research topic and as an investment. And that project is NEAR, or NEAR Protocol. NEAR Protocol encompasses a wide array of technology and engaged communities, all centered on the scalable and carbon neutral layer one blockchain at the heart of it all, which is actually very much so akin to what Ethereum 2.0 will be, or the new Ethereum network will be in the future. Now, Nir's vision for the future of crypto really aligns with my vision for the future of crypto, which is an interconnected multi-chain ecosystem comprised of many blockchains that coexist together. Nir has done a lot of work to this end already with the Aurora Bridge between Nir and Ethereum and collaboration with the app chain platform Octopus Network that provides interoperability for application-specific blockchains built with the Polkadot ecosystem substrate framework, among other things. Nir has also really excelled at providing quality user experience for their platform, both for users and for developers. When I went to their developer docs, I felt right at home. I could find all the stuff I needed. Everything just made sense. And that's an underrated thing. And the developer growth over the last couple years for Nir is evidence that this stuff matters. And Nir could also be about to enter into the ring with one of the juggernauts of this space right now, Terra Luna, because in a recent blog post by Captain Cole at Crypto Insiders, there's speculation that Nir is going to launch a new native algorithmic stablecoin called USN that will be pegged to the US dollar. And as we've seen with Terra, when you have a native stablecoin that's utilized for network activities and offers an attractive yield for holders, you can generate a lot of capital inflow to DeFi in your network and catalyze growth. Nothing's confirmed on this yet, but this move would make a lot of sense for Nir in many ways. Creating a native stablecoin with 15 to 20% yields would be pretty powerful for growth of the platform if done in a way where the yields are sustainable. That's pretty critical. Even if this doesn't come to fruition, venture capital seems to agree that Nir has a ton of potential, with $350 million in funding flowing into the project recently. The short-term price action may be bumpy given all that's going on in the market, but Nir is one of the long-term plays that I've been most interested in research-wise lately, and I'll be watching it pretty closely over time. Now, another project that I've caught up on by recommendation of a few folks in the comments that watch the show pretty often is called Render Network, with the token ticker Render, RNDR. Now, you know me, I'm all about solving a problem. And I think that in the face of the huge growth of the metaverse niche, Render is solving a pretty big problem. Here's the deal. Blockchain games, the metaverse, content creation in the virtual world or in the metaverse or multiverse, whatever you want to call it, it's going to require an incredible amount of graphics processing power, like a ton, more than the average person has access to. Creators are going to need help to get their content created. Developers are going to need more power to build these virtual experiences. Now, Render offers a solution here by creating a network of independent node operators who offer GPU-based processing power on demand to consumers to perform super-powered rendering activities. Essentially, you have node operators who provide idle GPU capacity to the network and then accept jobs from consumers, users like you and me, who provide the files and the native render cryptocurrency to cover the cost of that render job. This means that those with idle GPU power can earn by registering their GPU on Render to just take on jobs sort of passively. At scale, this is like a super GPU with economies of scale kicking in, potentially offering huge savings for people who need on-demand rendering for projects where it's just not economically feasible for them to procure their own hardware to do the job they're trying to do. Now, with the Ethereum merge coming up, moving away from proof of work, I bet there's going to be a lot of unused GPUs on hand that people want to use to make some money. So this could be the answer. Maybe this is a home for some of those. This is my cursory look at Render Network. I just started looking at it recently per your request, but I'll be digging in a little bit deeper after this. I'm very interested to learn more, and I think there's a lot of potential here. At least it solves a problem, and that's pretty key. Now, it is time for Rational Reactions, a segment on the show where I read headlines from tech and crypto-related publications and give you my instant rational reaction. So let me switch over to the computer and we can go ahead and get started with that. First story of the day. I'm getting better at this. I'm not saying question anymore. Watch, I'm going to do it next. But anyways, the first story of the day is from Cointelegraph. A double-edged sword? Once famous brands are getting into crypto as more defunct companies try to cash in on former glory by using various crypto avenues. Experts are divided if this is really good for the industry. Here's my take. This is not good for the industry. In reality, I think one of the biggest issues right now is there's a lot of companies that are sort of either have gone under and are coming back into the crypto space, which to me is just utilizing an old brand with nostalgia. It'd be like Toys R Us coming back with like a 10K profile picture NFT project. It's like the only reason anyone would buy them is because you're a millennial and you went there as a kid and you love Toys R Us, right? I don't think that this is representative of the future of crypto. This is a lot of companies seeing this trend and it's validating that this is a legit thing. This is something that there is interest in outside of just the core crypto community, but this is not advancing the space forward, right? Maybe a couple of these that come back will actually contribute something meaningful, but not really all that much. And at least I don't believe so. What do you think? Let me know in the comments. The next story is the HBAR Foundation. So it's the one behind Hedera. They launched a $250 million metaverse fund to enhance consumer brand adoption. This is the largest fund the HBAR Foundation has launched to date, a statement of intent for their aspiration in the tokenized economy and metaverse space. Now, this is very interesting, and it's almost semi-related to the story before. So this Hedera ecosystem, a lot of people have been asking me to cover it. Here you go. Here's an interesting one. So this fund is really interesting because it's going to sort of be this enmeshment point between the world of crypto, sort of the traditional metaverse, decentralized world, and some of these larger consumer brands that are a part of this sort of governance council and collaborate in the Hedera world. Okay, so you have $250 million metaverse fund. You're gonna have a lot of builders in this space that are looking to build something. This is a great way to attract those builders to the Hedera space in general. And I think that that's an underrated method, right? You see more and more projects doing this now, creating like grant funding, creating a venture capital arm or a treasury or whatever that is to incubate projects natively. So rather than just sitting on mounds and mounds and mounds of cash and waiting for something good to happen, invest back in the community. So I will tip my hat to this. This is a really good idea. And I'll be actually very interested to see what effect this has on the approach to the metaverse by some of these consumer brands. Will it shift them more towards the decentralized vision for the metaverse, or will it shift them, let them continue on their path towards the more centralized view of it? That will be very interesting to see, but overall, really cool to see that this fund is out there. The next story is from CoinDesk. A new SEC definition for, quote, exchanges has big implications for crypto. The crypto community should seize the opportunity to be heard as the SEC looks to expand its remit. Now, this particular story has a little bit of additional context sort of outside of this, but even without that, this idea that you want your voice to be heard as the SEC and as other regulatory bodies are trying to sort of feel out where the boundaries are and start to rule make or be a part of the rulemaking process. It's not really their job to make the rules all the time, singularly at least. Now, here's the thing. Everyone should be actively trying to find a way to participate in this process. If you're in Europe, if you're in the UK, if you're in the US, if you're in Canada, you have an equivalent agency like this. And you should be working to educate others. When you understand this stuff and you feel that you really get this, you should be educating people, because where a lot of the fear and really poor regulatory approach comes from is a lack of understanding in a lot of cases, or maybe misplaced opinions or data that's skewed or doesn't make sense. These are the sorts of things that we need to fight against. But here, the definition of exchange, if that's extended to decentralized exchanges, DEXs, right? They're called exchanges. So does this cover it? If you think about any communication protocol, and I think that's what this was about, it's like any communication protocol that can facilitate trade of any kind would be deemed an exchange. So does that mean my Coinbase app is an exchange? Yes. Does that mean if I can send crypto in a messaging app, is that an exchange? Maybe it is. So then the lines start to get blurred. You know Coinbase is an exchange, but you don't know if your messaging app is an exchange. Does that mean every single dApp on any smart contract, is that an exchange? Because it has the ability to effectuate sort of the transfer of Ether or Solana or whatever. Maybe it does. So this is very important for us to know and to have clear definitions, but definitions that make sense. So let your voice be heard, educate others, even if you don't want to get involved in politics. And I get that. Educating other people who will educate then other people helps spread knowledge throughout your community. So please, please do that. And with that, let's dive into a quick sponsor segment and then 404 Logic Not Found. Right. Real quick, before we dive into 404 Logic Not Found, I want to shout out the sponsor of today's show, iTrust Capital. With iTrust Capital, US-based crypto investors can invest in crypto within their own self-directed individual retirement account or IRA, which allows them to trade crypto in a tax-advantaged manner. Now, I've used my own IRA at iTrust Capital to build up a long-term portfolio of blue-chip cryptocurrencies for my own retirement. And of course, you have to note the high-risk nature of crypto investing and the specific tax situation that you're in before you make this move. So please seek a professional opinion if you need it. But those of you who do want to sign up for an account can do so for free and earn a $100 Bitcoin sign-on bonus after funding your account using the link in the description of this episode. Now, ladies and gentlemen, that brings us to 404 Logic Not Found. And for those of you who are, as of yet, uninitiated in this little firecracker of a segment, I highlight notable tech-related fails or otherwise stupid moves in the world that just need to get some attention. And speaking of attention, if you want to help this video or this podcast, just Crypto Over Coffee in general, get some attention from the algorithm robots, the algorithm droids, please hit the like button, get subscribed, follow the podcast, share it with your friends, because it tells those droids that you're enjoying the content, that others might also enjoy it. So thank you for that in advance. Now, today's 404 session centers on a pretty wild write-up or interview transcript of American University law professor Hillary J. Allen. And I read this week, and I read it on the Galaxy Brain newsletter, which I like, by the way. It's very interesting. I don't always agree with what's written there, but it's very interesting nonetheless. Good to get different opinions. But this particular headline was rather dubious when I saw it, and I had to click it. The headline strapline reads as follows: Is crypto recreating the 2008 financial crisis? This is an old trick from the financial industry, make things more complex. So that was the headline and the strapline. I mean, that's a pretty darn loaded title if I do say so myself. The 2008 financial crisis collapse was a result of, quote, too big to fail financial institutions, unethical and unsustainable financial practices, and complex financial instruments like credit default swaps and collateralized debt obligations that were used by Wall Street to set the stage for the reckoning in 2008. Not necessarily on purpose, but you get the idea. Much of this was blamed on shadow banking, which is a term that describes the opaque system veiled by complexity, such that the public or the average person cannot hope to keep these parties honest because they don't understand what's going on. It's opaque because they don't get it. This particular entry in Galaxy Brain laid out Professor Allen's opinions about parallels between DeFi or decentralized finance and the shadow banking that led to the crisis in 2008, urging regulators to act now and regulate this space at one point in the conversation. I can't remember exactly what she said about regulation, but whatever. I'd like to make clear that I actually appreciate these well-reasoned arguments. Though I disagree with much of it, there are also points I agree with. Firstly, Allen asserts that the incredible complexity of DeFi protocols means that the average person cannot fathom how to understand how they work and the risks associated with them. I mean, I've done this my whole career, and even I struggle to understand certain areas of DeFi sometimes. It takes me time to figure out. In that way, Allen has a point. I also agree that crypto is not as decentralized as certain loud industry loudspeakers might make it seem, but everyone already knows this. At least everyone that understands crypto knows this. Where I disagree with Allen is that DeFi's complexity and relative casino mindset is a means to a 2008 style financial crisis if adopted at scale. For one, DeFi has a much different market dynamic than traditional finance does. It's pretty capitalist and non-monopolistic in many ways, right? Because a new entrance to the DeFi space that builds something can readily challenge incumbents. And if they build a better product, liquidity flows to these new protocols and away from the laggards, the ones who aren't doing anything better than them anymore. While users may not easily understand the inner workings of DeFi protocols, the transparent nature of DeFi and its responsiveness to user demand means it's far different than opaque banking practices where customers have little sway. Banks and other big institutions have a monopoly on traditional market activities. That's where it contrasts. Secondly, one can also argue that DeFi doesn't have the same sort of system of dependency of too big to fail banking institutions that need to be bailed out when things go off the rails because if they were let to fail or they were allowed to fail, it would be even more catastrophic. Now, this part, people may argue, people might point to Terra Luna and UST as a potential dependency that poses a risk to DeFi, but I'm not fully sold on that narrative, really. Anyway, my main point here is that to compare DeFi to the banking system in the context of the makings of a financial crisis is not only comparing apples to oranges in many different ways, but it's calling for the wrong action in response. Regulating the crypto space with the same antiquated standards that arguably haven't even worked that well in banking at all times, that would be just a terrible move, a 404. DeFi is an opportunity to really fix a lot of what's broken in the financial system, but only if it's given the space to mature and regulated in a way that is well-informed. Again, I say I like Galaxy Brain's newsletter. I respect Alan's opinions. Just a handful of things here that I agreed with and a handful of things that I disagreed with, but the assertion that DeFi is shadow banking 2.0 is quite the 404 logic not found, at least in my opinion. I've left a link in the description if you want to read this for yourself. You should. Okay, folks, let's do some community Q&A. I always answer questions from folks who watch the show, and I've got some questions from last week's episode that I'm going to answer, and I want to remind you that if you have a question you want answered, leave them in the comments below on YouTube, or you can tweet me at Hoshoshi4 as well. So let's go ahead and dive into these questions, see what we've got on deck. All right, first question of the day is from Acme Data. I have a question about BTC and the future of that coin. Although last BTC won't be mined till around 2140, the dominance of Bitcoin certainly will last a long time. The network is very slow. There are many faster blockchain networks, but the coins and tokens that they're built on are not nearly as popular. How can the Bitcoin network be improved without changing BTC to something else? That could be really disruptive. So here's my opinion on Bitcoin, and I know everyone has a different opinion. Bitcoin is not a day-to-day payments network. I think that's clear now, right? Bitcoin is meant to be a really well-oiled machine for the sustainable and predictable issuance of supply, so a non-replicable digital asset that's issued up to a fixed supply. You have a very predictable supply and a predictable rate of inflation that decays on a cadence over time, right? The halvings. So we know when the last mined Bitcoin will happen, right? That's around 2140 by estimate of block height and stuff like that. We also know that Bitcoin cannot handle the day-to-day transaction volume of me buying a coffee. So that's where something like the Lightning Network has come to fruition around, a layer two that would allow sort of the day-to-day spending. But even still, even in the absence of the Lightning Network, you look at other projects out there that achieve sort of scalable payments peer-to-peer with cryptocurrency. I believe that Bitcoin is sliding into its role as a store of value, the sort of central bank, dare I say, of the crypto world, right? The decentralized world will run with Bitcoin sort of as the sun and sort of the planets rotating around it, right? Getting energy from Bitcoin. I really do think that Bitcoin is going to shift into that role even more than it already has, and it will sort of be the reserve for the rest of the crypto world. And I think that it fits really well there because you don't necessarily need it to do 1,000 transactions per second to serve that role. Maybe I'm just moving funds from Bitcoin, you know, from a custody provider to a self-custody wallet, so then I can, you know, tokenize that Bitcoin, wrap it, and use it in DeFi somewhere else. Maybe that's all I'm doing. Right? I don't need to do day-to-day transactions with Bitcoin. That's just me. So I really don't think much of a change is needed. Frankly, I don't think there will be any changes to Bitcoin at the core protocol that's meaningful from a scalability perspective, at least to the degree that we would need to go day-to-day. It will not move to proof of stake. It will never happen. It shouldn't happen. Proof of work is essential for Bitcoin and the economic dynamics of issuance, for the security of the network. So those things won't change. But overall, I think Bitcoin is fitting right into place where it should be. That's my opinion. Thank you for your question. Next question is from Jean-Paul Saliba. What do you think about Kadena in all caps, or Kadena, whatever, however you pronounce it? I don't even know how you pronounce it. But anyways, here are my thoughts. I actually had the chance a few years ago, maybe this is like, maybe this could have been like four or five years ago even. Time flies. I had the chance to sit down with the founders and some of the technical folks from Kadena at a conference, and they walked me through the PACT smart contract language early on in its development. Maybe it even called something different back then. This is a little fuzzy for me. But I was really, really interested in that project because of how much time they spent with me. And it wasn't like, this channel wasn't even started yet at that time. So to be honest with you, it wasn't like they spent any time with me because I had a channel, right? They spent time with me just because I was interested. I was a technical guy. I came in and I asked questions about the network. They said, can you teach me about this PACT language? Can you teach me about your protocol? And they walked me through everything. They sat with me for 3 hours. That I really respected. And I think that over the years, they've been silently building. Now they've sort of become a little bit more of a presence from the perspective of like being out in the public and marketing and stuff. But I think the foundations are there for Kadena, however you pronounce it, to be a force in the future. And I think the PACT language is an underrated piece of that. And if I'm another, if I'm another project out there in this space, I would be using PACT as an example of how you can build a really solid programming language for smart contracts on your blockchain network. So I'm a fan, I guess, is the way that I would say it. From the perspective of keeping up with it day to day, maybe less so, because there's a lot of projects out there, but I'm inspired. I will go back to it, do a little bit more of a deep dive again. So yeah, thanks for your question. And of course, thank you so much for watching this and every other episode of Crypto Over Coffee that you may have watched or listened to. I really appreciate it. If you have time to stick around, I've got a really great video here on the screen about Bitcoin, about crypto. You're definitely going to want to watch it. So please check that out if you're still on the YouTube channel. And of course, I hope you and your family have a wonderful weekend and week ahead. And until next time, cheers.